Welcome to Base by Base, the podcast of genomic discoveries. Have you ever stopped to think about what it really takes to develop a cutting-edge diagnostic test for an emerging pathogen? I mean, not in years, but in mere weeks. Or how swiftly our global scientific community can mobilize to identify a new, maybe mysterious virus when an outbreak really hits? It's an urgent race against time, where every single moment can quite literally determine the course of public health and, of course, patient care.
It truly is, yeah. The speed at which we can nail down the identity of a new pathogen is it's really the cornerstone of an effective outbreak response. It dictates how quickly control measures can actually be implemented, how we understand the transmission dynamics, and ultimately how many lives we can save. This deep dive is all about that incredible scientific agility and, frankly, ingenuity when the stakes just couldn't be higher.
Right. And before we dive fully in, just a quick celebration. Today's deep dive spotlights a brand new article from the molecular biology team at Sabin Diagnostico y Salud. So congratulations to Dr. Lucas Da Silva, Dr. Fabian Hurtado, and really the entire group for this outstanding work published in Genes.
Hear, hear. Great work.
And to help us answer today's big question, this remarkable team, led by Dr. Da Silva and his colleagues, recently published their findings. The paper is titled Development and Evaluation of a Molecular Test for Monkeypox Virus in the Federal District, Brazil.
What?
You can find it in Genes, the 2025 volume, volume 16, article 779.
So our focus today is squarely on the 2022 monkeypox or mpox outbreak. Now, this particular outbreak, it was caused by a double-stranded DNA virus, an orthopox virus, and it became the largest one outside of Africa in recorded history. We're talking over 117,000 individuals infected worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. And in Brazil, the first case was confirmed back in June 2022. By the end of 2024, more than 13,000 people there had been diagnosed. It was such a rapid and widespread event that the World Health Organization actually declared it a public health emergency of international concern in July 2022.
Okay, so given that really urgent backdrop, what was the core mission this team took on with their research? What problem were they trying to solve right then and there?
Well, their mission was absolutely critical and incredibly focused. They set out to develop and validate a laboratory-developed qPCR assay, so a test made right there in their lab, specifically for mpox detection and specifically in Brazil's federal district. You can kind of think of it as creating a rapid in-house molecular bloodhound, you know, custom-tuned to sniff out this specific virus. And this was vital because, I mean, early and accurate detection is just key to containing spread and enabling effective public health measures. Their objectives were really clear. Validate this new test and do it quickly. And then use its results to perform a retrospective epidemiological analysis. So looking back at how the virus spread using their test data.
Right.
Their underlying hypothesis was, well, it was bold but necessary, that a rapid, locally developed molecular test could significantly accelerate Brazil's immediate response to this unfolding outbreak.
So a really ambitious goal. How exactly did they go about building this molecular radar, as you put it, tuned to detect the mpox virus? Let's maybe unpack the toolkit and the meticulous steps they took.
Okay. So at the heart of any molecular test like this, you've got the primers and the probe. You can imagine these as like highly specific genetic magnets.
Mm-hmm.
They meticulously designed these magnets to latch onto a very precise sort of unvarying part of the mpox virus's genetic code, specifically a segment called the F3L open reading frame.
Okay, F3L.
Yeah, this particular region, it's essentially a critical blueprint for a viral protein, and it was chosen because it's highly conserved across different mpox strains.
Yeah.
Doesn't change much. And crucially, these primers were engineered not to react with other related orthopox viruses, like, say, the one that causes cowpox.
Oh, important.
Exactly. Ensuring incredibly high specificity. It means the test should only light up for mpox, avoiding those confusing false positives.
That makes perfect sense. That's fundamental.
Mm.
But beyond the detection chemistry, what about the samples themselves? How are they collected from patients and processed to make sure they got accurate results?
Right, the practical side. They primarily used swab samples taken directly from skin lesions, mm-hmm. things like pustule exudates or lesion crusts, you know, the visible signs.
Okay.
These areas are known to harbor very high viral loads, so they're ideal targets for detection. Makes the job easier. But what's really fascinating here, and I think it's a testament to their resourcefulness, is their choice of transport medium. They didn't wait around for mpox-specific collection kits, which, you know, might have been scarce early on. Instead, they cleverly repurposed Digeneen HC2 DNA collection devices.
Huh. The ones for HPV testing.
Exactly. The ones typically used for HPV. This was a novel, you could say pragmatic, solution for Mpox diagnosis. And it proved highly effective, probably because the viral concentration in these lesions is just so high.
That's a great example of innovation under pressure, really. And once they had the samples in this repurposed medium, how did they get the viral DNA out and ready for testing?
So the DNA extraction, they optimized this process on two different high-throughput automated platforms.
Oh, two. Okay.
Yeah, the QIAsymphony and the Maxwell RSC.
Mm-hmm.
And using two, well, it speaks volumes about their thoroughness and their aim for reliability, right? Instead of just picking one, they figured out the optimal recipe for each machine. They actually experimented with specific sample input volumes, 400 microliters for one, 300 for the other, and the elution volumes, how much liquid the DNA ends up in, settling on 60 microliters for both.
Tweaking the details.
Precisely. To ensure they extracted the maximum amount of high-quality viral genetic material. This meticulous approach was key to making sure their test had the best possible chance to detect the virus accurately, whichever system they happened to use that day.
Right, maximizing the chances. And then for the actual detection itself, once that precious DNA was extracted.
That's where real-time PCR or qPCR comes into play.
The workhorse.
Exactly. You can think of qPCR as a sophisticated molecular photocopying machine that can also count how many copies it's making in real time. They ran all reactions in triplicate.
Triplicate, right, for robustness.
Exactly, for reliable results.
Right.
And to make sure they had a good sample to begin with, you know, that it actually contained human cells and wasn't just, say, water. They included a human RNA's P gene target as an internal control.
Like a quality check built right in.
Perfect way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for a perfect positive benchmark, a this is what positive looks like signal, they used a synthetic oligonucleotide. That's just a tailor-made piece of DNA designed to mimic the viral target perfectly.
Got it.
The qPCR itself ran for 40 cycles of amplification. And a positive result was indicated by something called a cycle threshold, or CT value, below 40.
And lower CT means more virus.
Exactly. A lower CT value tells you the virus was present in higher amounts, so it got detected earlier in those photocopying cycles.
Okay, it sounds like they really covered all their bases for the actual test mechanics. But beyond just detecting the virus, how did they prove this test was truly accurate and reliable? You know, under real-world clinical conditions, that's where validation comes in, right?
Exactly right. Validation is critical. And they performed a rigorous, kind of multifaceted validation process. It wasn't just one check. So to confirm their initial positive results, especially early in the outbreak when clinical samples were maybe scarce and this test was brand new, they used Sanger sequencing, which is, you know, high resolution, often considered the gold standard method for reading DNA sequences.
And a classic method.
Precisely. They sequenced four distinct regions of the viral genome. This provided an independent and highly precise verification of their qPCR results. It's like double-checking your answer with a completely different, very powerful microscope, just to be absolutely sure.
Makes sense. What else?
Well, beyond just confirming positives, they also did extensive specificity testing.
Yes, making sure it doesn't pick up the wrong thing.
Exactly. This is crucial because you absolutely don't want your Mpox test mistakenly detecting something else, like, say, chickenpox. So they challenged the assay. They tested it against other common pathogens, SARS-CoV-2, herpes simplex virus, even varicella zoster virus, which causes chickenpox and can sometimes look similar clinically.
Right.
And the test proved to be exquisitely specific. It only reacted to Mpox, which is exactly what you need to prevent misdiagnosis.
That's vital, definitely. And how did they determine the absolute lowest amount of virus their test could confidently detect? Because, you know, in early stages of infection, that sensitivity is paramount.
Good question. That's where the limit of detection, or LOD, comes in. Basically, the minimum number of viral copies the test can reliably find. They determined this using a pretty sophisticated statistical method called probit regression.
Probit, okay.
Yeah. Essentially, they put the test through its paces with progressively smaller amounts of virus, like a dilution series. And then they used this advanced statistical modeling to pinpoint the precise threshold at which they could say with 95% confidence, yes, the test will detect the virus at this level.
So a very rigorous way to define sensitivity.
Very robust, yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, to prove its consistency day in, day out, they meticulously checked its analytical precision and reproducibility. They ran samples multiple times, both within the same day, that's repeatability, and across different days, reproducibility.
Wow.
100% concordance. Yeah. It means the test consistently gave the same answer, no matter when or how many times it was run. super reliable. So yeah, the results of this study, they really paint a clear and powerful picture of a highly effective diagnostic tool, developed with remarkable speed and precision too. Maybe we should delve into some of the key findings, because they have some pretty significant implications for public health.
Definitely. So the first big question, how well did this newly developed test perform when they actually compared it against the official established benchmark?
That's the crucial comparison. And the developed qPCR test demonstrated 100% accuracy when directly compared to the official reference laboratory in Brazil, which is Alisan-DF.
100%. That's fantastic.
It really is. And this wasn't just a win for their lab's validation. It meant their diagnostic reports were formally recognized. They were accepted into the National Surveillance Statistics.
Oh, that's huge.
It's a massive step for building local diagnostic capacity during an outbreak. It allows local data to directly inform the national response strategies in real time.
Incredibly reassuring for public health officials, I'd imagine. And in terms of its ability to pick up even trace amounts of the virus at that sensitivity, the low D, how good was it?
The limited detection was impressively low. They calculated it at approximately 21.25 copies per reaction with 95% confidence.
21 copies. How does that stack up?
That's a very sensitive result. And it aligns beautifully with other internationally validated MPOX assays. Those typically range from, say, 1 to 40 copies per reaction. So it's right there with the best of them.
Okay.
Furthermore, the qPCR efficiency itself was excellent, 97.4%. And the technical staff, the slope of 93.39 and an R-squared value of 0.999, these are really strong indicators of its robustness. It shows an exceptional ability to amplify even tiny amounts of viral DNA very effectively and consistently.
Like a very sensitive microphone picking up the faintest whisper.
That's a great analogy, exactly. Ensuring robust detection even when viral loads might be lower.
And beyond just that initial performance, could labs trust it to give the same results consistently, you know, time after time? Reliability.
Absolutely. Both repeatability, getting the same result within a single run, and reproducibility, getting the same result across different runs on different days, were measured at 100%.
Perfect consistency.
Yes. And that consistency is just paramount for any reliable diagnostic tool. It means clinicians and public health authorities could really trust the results coming from this assay.
Okay, so the test itself performed exceptionally well. But beyond that, the team also gathered critical epidemiological data from the, 295 samples they processed?
That's right, 295 tests conducted between July 2022 and December 2024.
What did they learn about the MPOX outbreak dynamics in Brazil from that data, especially in the Federal District?
Well, out of those 295 tests, 88 came back positive. That's about 30%. And what's quite striking is the average C's value for these positive samples. It was very low, 16.62.
16.62, that is low.
It really is, and it indicates a high viral load in the patient samples, generally speaking.
Right.
Which is consistent with what we know about MPOX lesions. The virus replicates to high levels there.
Okay. And were there any notable demographic patterns among those who tested positive? This kind of data can be vital for public health messaging, right?
Absolutely. And yes, there were clear patterns. And these patterns aligned very closely with the global trends observed during the outbreak. The positivity rate was significantly higher in male patients. It was 41.15% for males, compared to just 2.41% for females.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
It is. In fact, a striking 97.72% of all the positive results they recorded came from male patients.
Almost exclusively male.
Pretty much. And the average age for these positive males was 39 years, with exactly half, 50% of those positive males falling into the 31 to 40 age group. So this concentration within a specific demographic, it provides crucial guidance for targeting public health campaigns and prevention efforts effectively.
Makes sense. Any trends over time? Did the outbreak wax and wane?
Yes, very clear temporal trends emerged from their data. There was a sharp peak in positivity back in August 2022. That was right after the virus was really introduced and started spreading in Brazil.
Okay, the initial wave.
Exactly. Then demand for testing and the positivity rate declined significantly throughout 2023 and into early 2024. But interestingly, they noted a slight resurgence in both the number of tests requested and the positivity rate in late 2024.
A second bump.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
For instance, in the Federal District specifically, the positivity rate was 36% in 2022, dropped way down to 16% in 2023, but then rose again to 26% in 2024. And importantly, this pattern actually mirrored the national data being reported by the Ministry of Health. So the local test was tracking the national picture.
That's really valuable for surveillance. And one last practical point, once a patient was tested, how quickly could they actually expect to get their results back? Because in an outbreak, speed is everything for isolation and tracing.
Absolutely. And the average turnaround time was impressively swift, especially given the circumstances. It was just 2 days for samples that originated from within the federal district itself, and 3 days for samples that were sent in from other states, which involves transport time.
2 to 3 days? That's quite fast for a molecular test during an active outbreak.
It really is. It allows for prompt patient isolation, initiating contact tracing quickly, and timely clinical management, all of which directly impacts the ability to control the spread of the virus.
So stepping back and looking at the whole picture, what does this all mean when we connect these dots? I mean, the rapid development and validation of this Mpox test by the Sabin Diagnostico ISAU team, it really stands out as a significant achievement.
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
The study marks the first validated molecular test for Mpox developed in Brazil's entire Midwest region.
First in the region, okay.
Yeah, which is a huge step for regional capacity building and, you know, self-sufficiency and diagnostic capabilities, mm-hmm. rather than relying solely on national centers. And the fact that they achieved full validation in just 45 days.
45 days.
I know. It's frankly astonishing. And it really highlights its remarkable effectiveness as a public health tool when speed is of the essence. This rapid implementation allowed for an immediate diagnostic response for patients needing answers, and it provided crucial real-time data for understanding the virus's spread dynamics, enabling public health authorities to act decisively and quickly.
And it wasn't just about the raw speed, was it? You mentioned some innovative and sort of pragmatic aspects to their approach that allowed them to move so quickly and effectively, maybe even with limited resources early on.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't just fast, it was smart. One of the most innovative aspects, I think, was that pragmatic decision to repurpose the HPV transport medium.
Right, the duty tubes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It proved highly effective,
right.
Especially given the typically high viral loads in Mpox lesions. And crucially, it enabled efficient sample collection and transport even when Mpox-specific media might not have been readily available everywhere yet. It's just a brilliant example of making the most of what you have on hand in an emergency.
Resourcefulness.
Totally. And their decision to design primers in-house further underscored that local capacity building. It allowed them to quickly adapt and develop a tailored solution to this emerging threat, rather than solely relying on external, perhaps slower, international resources or commercial kits that might take time to procure.
Building local strength and the epidemiological data they collected, beyond just validating the test itself, seems to have offered critical insights that go way beyond the lab bench, right? Giving a real-time window into the outbreak.
Indeed. That data is incredibly valuable. The findings regarding the strong male predominance, for instance, they align perfectly with both the national Brazilian data and the global data. And while Mpox isn't strictly classified as an STI, the reality of the 2022 outbreak was that it predominantly affected young males, particularly men who have sex with men.
Okay.
Knowing that is invaluable for guiding targeted public health campaigns and prevention efforts, making sure resources and information get to where they'll have the most impact.
Right, tailored messaging.
Exactly. And the observed temporal trends, that sharp August 2022 peak and the later resurgence in 2024, the fact that these mirrored official Ministry of Health data just confirms the assay's utility for real-time surveillance. It shows its value in tracking the virus's trajectory accurately at a local level. And the federal district, you know, it had a particularly high incidence, which really underscored the vital need for robust, decentralized local testing capacity like this.
And the external quality check.
Ah, yes. The assay's consistent 100% performance in an external quality control program just further solidifies its reliability and trustworthiness for ongoing surveillance efforts. It passed the test, essentially.
Okay, so if you had to distill all of this down, maybe into a single most important takeaway from this deep dive, what would that be for you?
The single most important takeaway. For me, I think it's the clear, powerful demonstration that a robust, accurate, in-house qPCR assay can be developed and fully validated in under 2 months, 45 days, to be precise in this case, to effectively confront an emerging viral threat. This capability, the scientific agility, is absolutely essential for national health security and for mounting an immediate, effective public health response. It empowers a nation or even a region to build its own diagnostic firewall and protect its population rapidly.
A diagnostic firewall, I like that. Now, every scientific endeavor, no matter how groundbreaking, has its acknowledged limits and, you know, opportunities for future refinement. What were the acknowledged limitations of this particular work?
Right. No study is perfect. Well, the epidemiological analysis was retrospective.
Looking back.
It's, yeah. Exactly. Looking back at existing data, which, while powerful, can sometimes limit the specific cause and effect conclusions you can draw compared to a prospective study that tracks events forward in time. Also, a small technical point. The exact initial viral titer, or concentration, of the spiked sample they used for validating the limit of detection wasn't precisely known. While the method they used, Probit, is robust, knowing that precise starting number would allow for maybe even more refined quantification of the absolute low.
Okay.
And the authors themselves, very appropriately, acknowledge the need for prospective multi-center validation.
Testing it in more labs.
Exactly. To further broaden the test's applicability across different laboratory settings and potentially different populations, they also highlighted the importance of doing more in-depth studies on the long-term stability of the viral DNA in that repurposed HPV transport medium. You know, how long are samples good for if you need to store them? That's a practical consideration for things like biobanking or later research.
Makes sense. And looking forward then, beyond these limitations, what exciting future directions did they propose for this work, or maybe for similar diagnostic development in the future?
Well, they propose several compelling future directions. These include exploring further comparisons of different transport media, maybe finding something even better or cheaper for future outbreaks, optimizing that first step.
Mm-hmm.
They also suggest expanding the test into a multiplex panel.
Testing for multiple things at once.
Exactly. Imagine one test that could detect Mpox, maybe COVID, maybe flu, all simultaneously. That would be incredibly efficient, especially during times when multiple viruses might be co-circulating.
Definitely streamline things.
Hugely. And finally, they envision potentially integrating this kind of technology into point-of-care diagnostics.
Taking the test closer to the patient.
Precisely. Getting even faster results, perhaps right within a clinic or maybe even out in community settings, not just in a centralized lab. It really speaks to a future of truly rapid, accessible diagnostics, getting answers where and when they're needed most.
Fascinating possibilities ahead. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you found this analysis valuable, the best way to support Base by Base is to hit follow on Spotify and leave a 5-star rating. It takes only a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.